Tonight is May 15th. We're at Shari Tfilah, Tuesday night, learning Tractate Bava Kama Mishnah. This is our third and last class on Chapter 4, Mishnah 4. Third and last class on Chapter 4, Mishnah 4. So firstly, I have to begin for a minute giving the answer to a question that came up last week and I didn't remember the answer. I had a mental block. And the question was the following. When we say that Cheresh, Shoteh, and Katan, the deaf-mute, the imbecile, and the minor are exempt from all of the mitzvot of the Torah. Mikol mitzvot amorot b'Torah, all the mitzvot of the Torah, I brought up the question, does that mean all literally? Or does it only mean the positive mitzvot, but they're still obligated in the negative mitzvot, in the prohibitions? I brought up that question. I said I knew the answer, but I forgot. So I looked it up and I remembered. Literally, they're exempt from all the mitzvot of the Torah. Cheresh, Shoteh, the Katan don't have to do any of the mitzvot. However, there is a prohibition on other people from facilitating those people transgressing the negatives. In other words, the Katan, the Cheresh, Shoteh, the Katan, let's talk about the Katan. The Katan is allowed to eat anything he wants. The Cheresh is allowed to eat anything he wants. It could be shrimp, it could be bacon, whatever he wants. It could be meat and milk, it could be anything. Cheresh, Shoteh, the Katan are not obligated not only in the positives, but also not obligated in the negatives. However, another Jew, a Gadol, an adult, is not allowed to feed those people unkosher food. But if they want to do it themselves, they're allowed to do whatever they want. So certainly we don't have to help them do the positive mitzvot, but we are forbidden from facilitating them transgressing the negatives. But if they want to do it on their own, they can do whatever they want.
Are they exempt because it's like ignorance of the law is an excuse in this case? Or is it that even if they do know the law,
it's not a matter of knowledge, but it's a matter of responsibility.
Yeah. Okay.
Responsibility. They can't be held responsible.
Well, okay.
Is this a katan? I thought you said though, is somebody who's under somebody else's authority. It's not just like an orphan, but it's somebody that has a guardian or a parent.
So that's as far, like we talked about ownership and things like that. But as far as the mitzvot, these people are not obligated at all. Now, there is, of course, just like there is a law that says that an adult is not allowed to facilitate the transgressing of the negatives by the Cheresh, Shoteh, the Katan, so there's also a law that says that the parents are obligated to teach their children.
Teach the children.
But the child is not obligated to do the mitzvah. The parent is obligated to teach him.
Teach, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Both positives and negatives. But the child is not obligated on his own to do anything. And not obligated to refrain from doing anything. Okay. So, with that behind us, we can go on. And in our study last week of our Mishnah, again, Chapter 4, Mishnah 4, we're talking, remember, about the ox who belongs to a normal person that gores an ox belonging to one of these three, or the opposite, an ox belonging to one of these three who gores a known person. There were two basic questions that we left last week unresolved. And that is the katan, who the court has appointed for him an apitropos, a guardian. If that katan's ox, as a tame ox, gores someone else's ox, in that case, when the katan has an apitropos, someone who is responsible for the ox, even then do we say that the katan is exempt from any payment? Or then do we say, since he has an apitropos, then there is responsibility and has to pay for the goring of the ox in tam? That's one question we brought up. Another question was that our Mishnah says that as far as a katan that has an apitropos, if the ox becomes a muad, then the apitropos with the funds of the katan has to pay what a muad has to pay for goring.
But what's a muad again?
A forewarned ox who's done it three times.
That's right, the forewarned ox.
But the question that is left remaining is, how does that ox belonging to the katan who has an apotropus, how does it become a muad?
How does it become a muad?
Yeah, because of course you need three times.
Uh-huh.
But when did the three times start?
Uh-huh.
Because
the
katan only gets the apotropus because the ox gored.
The ox gored. So do you count that first time or not?
Do you count the first time? And how many gorings do you need to force the Beit Din to give the katan apotropus? Just one? Or is it two? Or is it three? And then once he gets an apotropus, do the previous gorings count retroactively, or do you only start counting for the minute he got the apotropus?
Well, it seems to me like that would just depend on the person.
It wouldn't be.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. But if you were really, for whatever reason, you just were not, you thought, well, maybe it won't happen again or something, you just kind of let it go.
Well, so, who says it depends on the person who got gored? It depends on the Beit Din. Let's remember what the Mishnah says, right? Let's go back to the Mishnah.
Does the Beit Din involve itself?
Like, yes, because remember, we read this. Let's read the whole Mishnah again.
Okay.
Get the background, and then let's look for the answers to these two questions in the Gemara and in the commentators. So the Mishnah, let's read it once again. Mishnah Dalet of Chapter Dalet, right? That's 4-4, Chapter 4, mm-hmm. Mishnah 4. Shur shel fikeach shenagach shur shel cheresh shotev katan chayav. The ox that belongs to the normal person that gored the ox of Cheresh Shotev Katan Chayav. Shel Cheresh Shotev Katan Shenagach Shoshel Fikeach Patur. But the ox of a Cheresh Shotev Katan that gored the ox of a normal person Patur, as we've been talking.
Mm-hmm.
And then it said Shel Cheresh, I'm sorry, Shor Shel Cheresh Shotev Katan Shenagach Beit Din Mamidin Lehen Apitropus. The ox of a Cheresh Shotev Katan Shenagach, that gored, doesn't say how many times.
Mm-hmm.
Beit Din, the Beit Din Mamidin Lehem appoints for them an apitropus. So that's the law. The Beit Din has to do it.
So it's not an obligation.
Yes, of the Beit Din.
But as soon as they hear about this.
Mm-hmm.
This event.
And perhaps it's only after one goring. Perhaps it's two, I don't know. Perhaps it's three gorings. It just says shenagach, that gored. It implies just once. It says shenagach, that it gored. And then it says idin lehen bifnei apitropus. And we forewarn for them in the presence of the apitropus. In other words, once an ox gores, we know. We bring, usually, the owners to the Beit Din with the witnesses to the goring, and we warn the owners of the ox. That's the process of mi'idin. When it happens three times, the ox becomes a mu'ad, becomes a forewarned ox. So here, we don't have the witnesses come to court to warn the katan, but to warn the apitropos.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's not just the katan, it's the cheresh shotev katan. All three of those, we don't have the witnesses warn the cheresh, but warn the apitropos of the cheresh. And then it says, "Nitpakach acheresh," which means that the imbecile got his facilities back. What's the English translation there?
Obtained sensible.
Regained his senses.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's for the deaf mute regained his hearing. Nishtapa hashota, that means he became back to his senses. And higdila katan, katan got older, he became a adult. Chazar letamuto, returns to its state of being a tam.
And tam is sensible.
Whoa.
Person?
Unforewarned. In other words, think of it like this. I'm a katan.
Mm-hmm.
I own an ox.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not responsible. My ox went and gored. The Beit Din appointed for me an apitropos. And then under the care of the apitropos, the ox went and gored three times.
Mm-hmm.
So the ox got now forewarned. The apitropos got forewarned. And the next time the ox gores, it's a muad. Has to pay nezek shalem, full damage.
Mm-hmm.
Which means that I, the katan, look at my apitropos and I say, you're not doing a very good job. Mm-hmm. My funds are being depleted because you let my ox score three times, became a muad, now it's scoring and has to pay full damage. Every time it does that, I'm losing money. You're not a very good apitropos. And then I come to my 13th birthday and I say to my apitropos, bye-bye, I'm now in charge. And my ox scores again. And the Beit Din says, pay up Nezek Shalem. I say to the Beit Din, no, my ox isn't forewarned. The apitropos was irresponsible. My ox should be considered a tam now, because it was his problem. It wasn't under my watch. And that's what the Mishnah says, that chazar letamuto, the ox returns to its unforewarned state, because now it's a different person in charge. It's not the apitropos, it's the owner himself. And the owner says, I don't want to take responsibility for my irresponsible apitropos. And the halacha says, you're right, you don't have to take responsibility for your irresponsible apitropos.
So it's not the ox.
So even though this ox has repeatedly gored, it's got, the law has got to do with the person who is responsible.
Because even if an ox is a very, very bad temper, a responsible owner
will take actions to prevent it.
Yeah.
Woo! So we are not used to managing oxen.
Who's not used to it?
We are not. I'm not.
Right. We don't know what's involved in managing oxen.
I think of this ox as like a rabid dog. Like you should just shoot it immediately.
Oh, yeah.
But it was something to be managed.
Oxen were work animals. I guess that's why they were, they were valuable.
Yeah, a lot. Very valuable.
Yeah. And so, but you're right. But at some point, they're just too dangerous to.
Yeah, and when is it so dangerous that the owner will keep it out of the public domain or even shoot it? Mm-hmm. That's a decision of the owner.
Yeah, yeah.
If he wants to take his chances, he'll take his chances.
But I mentioned last
week. Or they have to keep it chained somehow.
In Las Vegas?
So when it's working.
About the dog that just recently. There was a case in Las Vegas because when I was home 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. It's a big case in Las Vegas right now. Well, maybe it's over by now. Mm-hmm. But a dog and a baby. The baby was trying to walk, was a 1-year-old kid, mm-hmm. leaned on the dog
bit it,
killed it.
Killed it.
So the owners said, we need to put the dog to sleep. Well, there was a big outrage in Las Vegas from the dog owner says, but the dog has only committed this thing, has only committed the offense once. And it wasn't the dog's fault because the baby leaned on the dog and the dog didn't know better. So we need to save there was a big protest. We need to save the life of the dog. The dog needs to be with new owners that have no children. And that's just the rule, and we cannot put this dog to death. And this has been raging. This was raging 2 weeks ago, so I don't know what happened. But the owner was like, we really loved the dog, and we know it really wasn't the dog's fault, even though the dog killed our baby, but we really do think the dog probably needs to be put to death. But there's this outrage. It's only the first, and it was. It's the first defense of the dog. And there was a big, so I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
And this happened last week. So, and they were supposed to make the determination. They said they were going to wait 7 to 10 days before they would determine whether or not to put the dog to sleep.
The dog belonged to the people that the baby belonged to?
Yeah.
So who's bringing the case for the dog?
Dog lovers of the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's really relevant to the next mission, actually.
But it was exactly
exactly the situation.
And they were saying, how many offenses has this dog done? I mean, he did one. I mean, what could be worse than killing your 1-year-old?
So our Mishnah is about goring and not killing.
Not killing.
Right.
Next Mishnah is about goring and killing.
Yeah.
So wait for that.
Wow.
Okay, so I want to read further on in the Mishnah. We just read about the ox chazar kamuto. Mm-hmm. Returns to its being unforewarned mm-hmm. when ownership is transferred from the apitropos to the owner, who became now legally responsible. Mm-hmm. That's Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Harehu Bechezkato. Behold, he re- remains in his situation, his chizkah, his hazakah, mm-hmm. his assumed situation. He was a muad, he remains a muad, even though the ownership has been transferred from the apotropos to the katan, or to the shoteh, or to the cheresh, it still remains a muad. Okay. That's what Rabbi Yossi says, and that's an open question here. Mm-hmm. In the Mishnah, let's just read the last statement in the Mishnah before we go on to the sources. Shur ha'itz tadin. That word, itz tadin, is not a Hebrew root. It's a Greco-Roman word. It sounds like the word itz tadion, which sounds like the word stadium. And that's what it is. The word stadium comes from the Greek word itstadion, which means an amphitheater, a stadium. It means an ox belonging to the stadium that stages these public contests, gladiator contests, or contests between two oxen. In other words, it's an ox that's been trained to gore.
Right, like the pit bulls.
Okay. Well, they haven't been trained to gore.
Some of the pit bulls...
Trained like a police dog or something, you mean?
There was a case in San Francisco. They trained to attack, actually, it was horrible, black people. Trained.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And there was a case like that.
Okay, so here's the shur stadion eino chayav mita. The stadium ox is not culpable of the death penalty.
Oh.
Yeah.
This is a new subject. Really connected to the next Mishnah. That's what I said 5 minutes ago. It's next week's subject. Until now, we've talked about the ox that gores, injures.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now we're talking about an ox that kills.
But it's been trained to do that.
And among the many situations of an ox that kills, there's the ox who kills because it's been trained to kill.
Which means that it's been caused
by a human being and not by itself.
So if it's trained to kill, it's not...
Okay, so we learned in the Torah, and we'll spend more time in this next week, that an ox that kills is chayav mita. It has to be stoned.
Oh, this is stoned?
No, it's not stoned, but I'm telling you what the Torah says. The Torah says an ox that kills, even the first time it kills a human being, has to be stoned.
But I mean that word, chayav.
Hayav mita means culpable death.
Oh, culpable.
So here we're hearing that even though the Torah says that an ox that kills a human being even the first time has to be stoned, the halacha says that's only when the ox just does it of its own accord. But if it's been trained to kill, then the halacha is that you, and it killed, you don't have to kill it. It's not its fault. And that's because the verse says, Shene'emar ki yigach. When gores, when an ox gores, a human being kills it, it must be stoned. But the rabbis say that's when the ox is the subject of the verb. The ox gores. But in this case, it's not that the ox gored, it's the ox was made to gore. Which would be another verb, which would be velo sheyigichuchu. And not that it was made to gore. Since the Torah says an ox that gores, it doesn't say an ox that was made to gore. Therefore, an ox that was made to gore isn't covered under the law of an ox that gores is culpable of the death penalty. But again, that subject will begin next week.
That's the ox that was trained for the arena kills someone outside the arena.
It doesn't say where it did
where it.
Where it
is. Doesn't
say.
Because it killed someone in the arena, that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah. But if it did it outside the arena,
can't necessarily
the same thing, I guess.
Between it and out of the arena.
Probably that's the situation.
No, I mean, ox can't. But it seems like if it's outside the arena, it's even more dangerous than a normal ox.
Well, yeah.
So let me just say here, you're absolutely right, but apparently this is not about the danger to society. This is about the principle. It's about responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And the ox is held responsible for its behavior, except if it's been forced to act in that fashion. So it might be very dangerous now, but you can't hold it personally responsible.
Because it's doing what it's been trained to do.
We're
expecting more from the ox than we are from the katan.
Good point.
Well,
I mean,
and no.
So again, with the katan, it wasn't an ox that was killing. It was an ox that was
goring,
that was hurting. But this ox is
killing
human beings.
The pit bull thing, the pit bull.
And there is a very, very powerful symbolic statement that the halakha makes that an ox that gores and kills a human being has to be stoned. And of course, we understand that an ox doesn't have free will, but there's a sense here of teaching the whole community the seriousness of taking human life and about responsibility. Mm-hmm. But you can't make that same show of responsibility vis an ox that's been programmed to do what it did. But I understand it's dangerous.
Yeah.
So how do we deal with the practical
like
aspects of it?
It has a higher responsibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you have to publicly stone the ox.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, but it's a good point. That
so you stone the owner.
Yeah, I know. Do they have anything about the owners being responsible for...
Yes, but let's wait for next week.
Is the ox already automatically forewarned in that case? I mean, does the owner have to pay, no matter what, has to pay the...
No, but again, let's wait for next week when we talk about the oxen that kill human beings, because we're still really in a different subject. It just happened to be that this is appended to today's Mishnah, so I read it. Let's go back to our subject. Okay, so now, we said we have a number of questions, two questions. One is the Chereshutei V'Katan that has an apitropos, and the ox gores not three times but less. Is there a need to pay? From the Mishnah, it seems like the answer is no. Because the Mishnah says that we ma'amid apitropos, we appoint an apitropos, only to make it into a mu'at. The Mishnah seems to imply that as far as when it's a tam, even if there's an apitropos, doesn't have to pay, not even chatzi nezik. That's the implication of the Mishnah. We have to talk about that. Another question we have to talk about is how many times does it take for the ox belonging to Chereshei V'Katan, who has an apitropos, how many times did it take to make it into a mu'at? These are the two questions. Let's look at the sources. Looking at the sheets I gave out today. And we are at the bottom of the second side. The bottom of the second side. Okay, so the first side is the opening page, and the bottom of the second side of that, the last source there, says Babylonian Talmud, Masechet Baba Kama, Daf Lamed Tet Amud Aleph. Everyone have the place?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it says Gemara. And this is the Gemara on our Mishnah. Right on our Mishnah. And it says, Ha Gufa Kashya. Behold, itself is difficult.
It's a kasha, yeah. Okay.
Right? Behold, itself is difficult. In other words, it's not that I'm going to ask a point of information on the Mishnah. It's not that I'm going to bring an outside source and show a difficulty between the outside source and the Mishnah. But the Mishnah itself is internally contradictory. Behold, itself is difficult. And now it goes on to tell me what's difficult within the Mishnah itself. Amrat, you said, in other words, you wrote in the Mishnah, quote, Shor shel chereshote v'katan shenagach, shor shel pikeach patur, end quote. Mm-hmm. That's what you said in the Mishnah, that an ox of a chereshote v'katan that gored a regular person patur. That's what you said. End quote. I'm in the last three words of the line. Alma means it turns out from there. You see from there. Alma means you see from there. Ein mamidin apitropos letam ligbot migufo. Translation. You see from there that we don't appoint an apitropos for a tam to collect from itself. Which, since it said across the board, without any details, without distinguishing anything, that the ox of a chereshote v'katan that gores doesn't have to pay. So we think that means even if the apitropos doesn't have to pay, because it says it, don't have to pay. So that would imply that it never has to pay, even if it has a apitropos. That's the implication the Gemara understands. And then the Gemara says, we're now at the semicolon, in the middle of the second line, Ema Seifa. Ema means I will say. It's, I will show you now this Seifa, the end of the Mishnah. What is Ema Seifa? I'll show you the end. And it quotes from the Mishnah, Shor shel cheresh shoteh v'katan shenagach, beidin mamidin lehem apitropus, umiidin lehem bifnei apitropus. Translation, the shor of the cheresh shoteh v'katan that gored, the beidin appoints for them an apitropus, and we warn for them in the presence of the apitropus. End quote. And says the Gemara, the middle of the third line, Alma mamidin lehem apitropus latam ligbot migufo. We see from here, Alma, that we do appoint an apitropus, and since we appoint an apitropus, it must be that latam ligbot migufo, for a tam ox, an unforewarned ox, to collect from itself. In other words, if there's an apitropus, like we said, we do establish an apitropus. Then if the ox gores, then of course you have to pay, because an apitropus is a responsible person. So that would mean that you have to pay. So that's the question. Does the Mishnah want to imply that a ox of a cheresh shoteh v'katan that gores is always exempt? Or does it want to imply that once there's an apitropus, it has to pay? That's the question. We don't know. We do know from the Mishnah that when it becomes a muad, it has to pay if it has an apitropus. But what if it's a tam? Does it have to pay? That's the question. Mm-hmm. And we get conflicting signals if we look at the Mishnah itself. So now we go on in the Gemara. I'm just turning the page. Mm-hmm. It's the same Gemara. The same Gemara. Not skipping anything. And it says, Amar Rava, said Rava. Rava is a Babylonian rabbi. We're about the year 350 of the Common Era in Babylonia. Amar Rava hachi katani. Thusly, it means. Hachi katani. Thusly, hachi is thus. Katani means, it means to say. Thusly, it means to say. Ve'im chuch zaku naghanin mamidin lehem apitropus umiidin lehem bifnei apitropus umashvinen lehum muad dechi hadar v'nagach l'shalem mei aliyah. Translation, if that's im huchzaku, they were established, they became nagchanin, if they became gorers, if they became gorers, mamidin lem apitropos, we set up for them apitropos, umiidin lem bifne apitropos, and we warn them in the presence of apitropos, umashvinin lahu muad, and we turn them into, mashvinin, we turn them into a muad, dechi hadar v'nagak l'shalem mia aliyah, that if it returns, dechi, that if Hadar returns, Menagach and Gors, Lishalem, it has to pay Me'aliyah from everything. So what the Rav is saying is that we appoint the apitropos only for the purpose of the forewarning to make it into Muad, but we don't appoint the apitropos to create responsibility for paying when it's still a Tam. So if the question we asked was, does an ox of a cheresh shoteh v'katan that's under the guidance of an apitropos and gores once, two, or three times, if not more, in other words, it's a tam, does it have to pay chatzin nezek? The answer is no. Only when it gets to be a muad does it have to pay. But not as a tam. Even though there's an apitropos who should be responsible for it. And if you remember, we actually talked about this last week, and we saw Tosfot that asked, well, why not? Why shouldn't the apitropos be considered to be responsible such that the ox gores as a tam and has to pay chatzin nezek? Why not? And Tosfot looked for answers, didn't find, until it said the Torah is simply being nice to the poor old katan and the cheresh and the shoteh. It's giving them a bargain. But really, should have to pay, doesn't have to pay.
Well, it seems like it's giving the apotropos a bargain, too, because this poor person's suddenly been appointed, and now suddenly you expect this person to shell out of their pocket for something?
Well, no, no, it would be the funds of the...
It would be the funds of the Catan.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the apotropos might even be paid. Might even being paid from the funds of the Kereshot of the Catan.
What if they don't have funds? They have an ox.
If well, they have an ox. I guess they can pay. You give the ox up?
Right. If they don't have funds, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It could be that the Beit Din tries to find a volunteer apotropos. Mm-hmm. But of course, there's not too much of a point in having a apotropos if there's no funds to pay when it becomes a muad.
Yeah.
No, except that you can give up the ox itself.
Well, the ox can earn money, though.
No, you can't give up the ox. Yeah. You can give up the ox. You can.
Yeah, the ox can, you know, it grinds grain. It does all kinds of things.
That's
it pulls carts. It does
things. Right, right. The apotropos can put the ox to work for the Catan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Thank you. It's true. So.
And tam means not forewarned.
Exactly. Just remember tam like tame.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tam like tame. Okay.
And now we're going to see the Gemara, and it's skipping Rashi. And skipping the Tosfot that we saw last week, we're going to see the Gemara that is going to bring a different opinion as to this question of, does the ox that's a tam, that is guided by an apotropos, does it have to pay when it gores? Does it pay chasinezik? We said that Rava said no. But the Gemara now is going to go on the next folio, right? That was Lamed Tet Amud Aleph. Now we're going to be Lamed Tet Amud Bet. The next folio in the Gemara is a kind of complicated sugya, complicated passage that actually brings up an opposing opinion.
So have we settled on the law?
No.
Not yet.
Rava said the law is doesn't have to pay.
Okay.
But the rest of the Gemara, as it goes on, is going to bring up an alternative reading. You ready?
Yep.
So the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah. No, I'm sorry. It quotes from the conclusion that mamidin lehem apitroposin letet letam ligabot migupo, ligabot migufo, translation, and we appoint an apitropos for a tam to collect from its body. So that is actually a question. In other words, do we appoint an apitropos in the case of a tam to pay if it gores? So Rava said no. But now the Gemara is going to discuss that again. And the Gemara says, Tanai hi. See that word Tanai?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone know what it means?
No.
The word Tanai means a machloket Tanaim, an argument of the earlier rabbis. Tanai means an argument of the Tanaim of the earlier rabbis, the rabbis of the period of the Mishnah and the Braita. So in other words, Rava had suggested his own answer, and his answer was no. But now the Gemara says, we don't have to deal with this on the basis of Svara, of logic, and of reading, of close reading of the Mishnah. It's actually an explicitly discussed question in an earlier source. And that source is in a Braita. And now we quote the Braita, Ditanya, as we learned in a Braita.
What's a Braita?
The word means external, and it means all material of the rabbis from before the year 200 that remained external to the Mishnah, that wasn't included when the Mishnah was edited. Mm-hmm. And this Braita reads as follows. Shor shenitcharshu ba'alav. An ox that went deaf its owners. Vishenish tatu ba'alav, that went crazy its owners. Vishalhu ba'alav lemidinat hayam, or that went its owners to a country of the sea. Country of the sea means far away islands from which you rarely come home. In other words, the other side of the world.
So the owners just left.
Disappeared. So we have here three different scenarios. An ox owned by someone who became a deaf person and therefore no longer responsible. or who went crazy and therefore no longer responsible, mm-hmm. or the owner simply skipped town. And then, of course, the ox is wandering around town, do a little bit of amateur goring.
Do whatever it feels like.
So,
it's an orphan ox.
An orphan ox, okay. So, we read as follows, right after the hyphen. Yehuda ben Nakusa Amar Sumchus, which means that a rabbi, an early rabbi, mm-hmm. called Yehuda ben Nakusa, said in the name of Sumchus, who's an even earlier rabbi. Sumchus. Horeyhu betamuto ad she'idu bo bifnei ba'alim. Behold, it is in its tamness, its tameness, until they will forewarn it in the presence of the owners. Okay? Mm-hmm. Now what that seems to mean is, and I say seems to mean, is that since the owners are unavailable, either because they went crazy, or became deaf, or moved away, there's no way to make the ox into a muad. And it stays in its tamness, tamuto, until you can have owners who can be responsible for it. But until then, it remains a tam. That's what the Gemara seems to say. Okay? And then we get to the third line. V'hachamim omrim, but the sages say, you know, the opinion we saw until now was just two rabbis, Yehuda ben Nakusa and Sumchus. But the hachamim say, the majority of the sages say as follows. The third word of the third line. Mamidin lehem apitroposin, I'm sorry, I pronounced it wrong, aputropin. A letter is missing from the word for some reason. It's not apitropos, it lost the final S sound. Umi'idin behem b'fnei apitropin. So the Hachamim say, we set up an apitropos, and we warn the ox in the presence of the apitropos. Which means that the Hachamim seem to be holding that the ox does not remain a tam, it can become a muad, because we forewarn it in the presence of the apitropos.
So we have assigned somebody to look after this ox. Even in the case of where the owners disappear.
Yeah, and it seems, just like our Mishnah said, we set up an apitropos, so it seems to say that the Hachamim are saying the same thing. And then this brayta goes on, I'm reading now after the semicolon, nitpakach hacheresh,
the deaf guy
got his hearing back, nishtafa hashota, the shote became sane, v'higdil akatan, or the minor, became an adult. Uva'u va'alav m'dinat hayam, and the owners came back from the islands of the sea. In other words, the owners came back. What happens then? Yehuda ben Nakusa Amar Sumchus, said Yehuda ben Nakusa in the name of Sumchus, chazar letamuto. It returns to its tamness, to its tameness. Ad she'idu bo bifnei ba'alim. Until we forewarn it in the presence of the ba'alim, the owners. Amar Rabbi Yossi, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yossi said, Harehu bechezkato. Behold, it is in its chazakah, in its established state. In other words, if it became a muad, it remains a muad. End of the Braita.
Okay.
And now the Gemara is going to say, guys, this Braita makes no sense. We have to reinterpret it. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Amru. They said, in other words, the rabbis looking at this Braita are going to analyze it. My quote, Harehu betamuto, end quote, de ka'amar sumchus. Translation, my, what? In other words, what in heaven's name
is he talking about?
What on earth
quote,
is he talking
Harehu about? Harehu betamuto, behold, it's in its tameness, end quote, that Sun Tzu says. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. What does it mean that it remains in its tam, muto, in its tameness? And then the Gemara explains why it can't mean anything, why it's totally ridiculous and self-contradictory. Here's the explanation of why it's ridiculous and self-contradictory. Because, ilema, if you will say, delo miyayed klal, if you will say that it can't become a mu'ad, lo miyayed klal, it's not mu'adable in good English, klal at all. Ha, behold, mi katani seifa, quote, chazal etamuto, end quote, michlal di'yayed. Translation, from the last two words of the last line after the question mark, if you will say that it can't become a muad at all, behold, that which we learned in the end of the Braita, it returns to its tamness. Behold, it was forewarnable. I will now explain. The implication of the words of Sun Tzu from the beginning of the Braita are that this ox can never become forewarned. Whereas the implication from the end of the Braita of Sun Tzu is that it can become forewarned. And then I'll show you that inside. Right, we're going to now go to the Braita and look at what the Gemara is saying about it. I'm in the Braita in the second line of the passage, where it says right after the hyphen, Yehuda ben Nakosa Amar Sumchus, these two rabbis say, Harehu betamuto ad she'idu bo bifnei habalim. Behold, it is a tam until it will be forewarned in the presence of owners.
Which means it can't become
a muad because there's no owners, mm-hmm. right? The owners went crazy or went to the islands of the sea. So it looks like Sumchus is saying, through Rabbi Yehuda ben Nakosa, that this ox cannot become forewarned. But let's now move to the third line at the end, which is still in the Braita, after the semicolon, and it says, Nitpakach ha-cheresh, the cheresh became hearing, Nishtafa ha-shoteh, the shoteh became sensible, Higdil ha-katan, the katan became an adult, Uval ba'ala mimidinat ha-yam, or the owner came back from the islands of the sea. Yehuda ben Nakosa mar Sumchus, said Rabbi Yehuda ben Nakosa through Sumchus, Chazar l'tamuto, the ox returns to being a tam.
How can it return if it never left being a tam?
I couldn't have said it better.
Yeah.
Vivian, you having a problem?
Yeah, I'm having a problem. Exactly where are we?
Yeah.
Right? So the opinion of Sumchus is self-contradictory. The opinion of Sumchus is self-contradictory.
Right here?
Yeah.
Okay.
So now I have to forewarn everyone in the room. We pointed out that the Braita is self-contradictory. The opinion of Rabbi Yehuda ben Nakosa in the name of Sumchus is self-contradictory, which means that the text is faulty somehow, or there's some words missing, some of you don't understand. What the Gemara is going to do is going to completely reinterpret the Braita in a fashion that's not the Pshat. But it has no choice, it feels, because the Braita doesn't make any sense. It's going to give it a meaning you would never have thought of in a million years. And it's going to come to a conclusion that relates to the question we want to know the answer to, which is not about forewarning. We want to answer to a different question. If remember, our question is, this type of ox without owners, if it gets an apotropos, does it have to pay when it's a tam? Mm-hmm. That's our question. Right. And the Gemara, the Braita doesn't assess at all, but the Gemara is going to make the Braita say that, because it can't mean what it says, because it's self-contradictory. Here we go. So where are we now? We are right after the exclamation point. Okay. Find the exclamation point. Vivian, you have it?
No, but
in the line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, in the middle of the sixth line.
I got it.
Yes.
Got it.
Ella, rather, what must the Braita really mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Rather my Rather, what is the meaning of my means what? Right? What in heaven's name is the meaning of be of quote Hareyu Batamuto, end quote. What's the meaning of what the Brayta said that behold it's in its tamut, it's in its tameness. In other words, when the owners come back, it becomes tame again. What could that mean? Because it never became forewarned. So what could it mean? Says the Gemara as follows. Harehu bitimimuto. When it said tam, that remains in its tamness, it didn't mean tam. It meant tamim, which is a word that sounds very similar. So tam, of course, is a technical term that means unforewarned, but it couldn't mean that. So it means tamim. Tamim means, in this context, unblemished. Tamim, mm-hmm. Like sacrifices in the temple have to be tamim, unblemished.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. And in what sense do we mean it remains unblemished? The lo michasrinan lei, that we don't make it lack anything. We don't cause it to be lacking. Michasrinan lei, we don't cause it to be lacking, meaning we don't take any money from it.
Mm-hmm.
When it said it's tam, it doesn't mean that it's the status of tam. It means it's tamim, it's unblemished, in that we don't take any money away from its apitropos, from its owners.
From its apitropos or its owners?
In other words, from its owners by way of the apitropos. Okay. That even though it has an apitropos, we don't take any money away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's read on. Alma, we learn from here. Ein mamidin apitropos latam ligbot migufo. We learn from here, we don't appoint an apitropos for a tam to collect from its body. In other words, apitroposum are only for making it into a muad, they're not for collecting from a tam.
So they are just like kind of witnesses, or
not witnesses?
Why would it take an apitropos to make it into a muad?
Because you need someone responsible who has acted irresponsibly. But if there's no one responsible, that means he didn't act as he shouldn't have acted, and therefore it doesn't become a muad.
Okay.
So according to this, the only purpose of the apitropos is for the making it into a muad, but not for paying as a tam. And that actually, of course, is in accord with what we learned earlier. That's what Rava said also.
Mm-hmm.
That as far as the tam goes, right, even if the apitropos doesn't have to pay. But we're not finished.
Mm-hmm.
We're now at the end of a line. After the semicolon.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, Vachamim omrim. Right, so we're now quoting what we had read from the Brayta about the opinion of the Chachamim, the sages. And what did we quote there? We quoted Mamidin lem apitropos umiidin lem bifnei apitropos. So the Chachamim had said that we appoint for them an apitropos and we forewarn for them in the presence of an apitropos.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's talking about forewarning. It's about making it into a muad.
Mm-hmm.
But since we interpret the opinion of Sumchus as saying that the apitropos doesn't have to pay when it's a tam, if the Chachamim disagree, and the Chachamim do disagree, then what must the Chachamim be holding? That it does have to pay as a tam. And that's what the Gemara says now. Alma, therefore we see from here, Mamidim apitropus latam ligbot migufo. We see from here that we establish an apitropus for a tam to collect from itself. So there it is, guys. Even though the Braita did not seem at all to be talking about the question of, does a ox owned by a person who's not responsible, who has an apitropis, and it gores as a tam, does he have to pay? The Braita didn't seem to be talking about that. But the Gemara says it is talking about that.
Because we need that to be talked about.
We need it, no, because itself, the Braita didn't make any sense on its own terms. We gave it some new meaning, in which Sumchus was saying that as a tam, we don't take any money away from it, even if it's apitropis, which means that the Hachamim must be disagreeing. So therefore, to sum up everything, the Hachamim say that the ox owned by a Chereshot Tevet Katan, or someone who went far to the islands of the sea, and the ox gores as a tam, has to pay. Has to pay. That's what Hachamim say. And Sumchu says, doesn't have to pay. And that's all in a Braita, means an ancient source. And I just remember that Rava had not known all of this stuff about the Braita, apparently. And he had said, doesn't have to pay. So we have now Braita has Hachamim saying, have to pay. Sumchu saying, you don't have to pay. And Rava says, don't have to pay. And the question is going to be then, of course, what's the halakha?
Yeah.
Right? So why don't we immediately go to the Rambam? Even though it's a line left in the Gemara, we didn't do. Since this is fresh in our minds, let's see the Rambam, the Mishnah Torah, what he says about this, what the law is going to be. The Rambam says...
Next to the bottom there? Oh, which one? Oh, right below it?
It says, sure shall.
I'm thinking, is this the Rambam? Right.
Okay.
We're going to read the Rambam in Hilchot Nizkei Mamon, Perek Vav, Chapter 6, Halacha Gimel. See the place? Shor shel cheresh shoteh v'katan umi shehu b'midinat hayam. Translation, the ox of a cheresh shoteh katan, and who that is in the Midinat Hayam, that's someone who's far away and left his ox, shenagchu, that they gored, pitorin. It's pator. We learned that from the Mishnah. Aval, beit din mamidin lem apitropos, but beit din appoint an apitropos, umiidin behem bifnei apitroposin, and we forewarn for them in the presence of apitropos. That's all in the Mishnah. Next halacha, halacha dalid, hiziku ahar shehuadu bifnei apitropin. They caused damage, they gored, the ox gored, this ox without owners.
Hiziku means...
Hiziku, what? Language of nezik. Cause damage. Ahar shuadu bifnei apitropin. After they were forewarned in the presence of the apitropos. Says the Rambam, imadayin hu tam, if it's still a tam, because it didn't do it three times, mishalem chatsi nezik mi gufo. It pays half nezik. That's the Rambam's decision.
So it seems like it agrees with the Chachamim.
So the Rambam is holding like the Chachamim as interpreted by the Gemara.
So pays half damage.
Pays half damage.
So once it gets an administrator.
Once it gets an administrator and it does damage, it has to pay.
Half damage.
Right. Which of course is really what makes sense. It's logical.
Yeah.
In the end we came towards something very logical. But just let me show you that you see the small print there?
Yes.
Under the Rambam? That is the Hasagota Ra'avad. That is the criticism of the Ra'avad. The Ra'avad is Rav Avram ben David, who wrote glosses on the Mishnah Torah, and wherever he disagrees, we hear his shout. So it
and
says
who is he?
Rabbi Avram ben David.
And who is he?
He's the Ra'avad, one of the major critics of the Rambam.
Oh.
So we're going to... That's the Ravad calling.
Yeah, Rabbi David Ben...
Avram Ben David.
Oh, Rabbi Avram.
And it's in small print.
Yeah.
And it says, Hiziku ahar shuadu bifnei apitropin, imadayin hu Tam Mishalem Chatzinezek Migufo. That's all a quote from the Rambam.
Right. Yeah.
He's telling us what he's bothered by, mm-hmm. that the Rambam says it has to pay. And then at the end of the line, after the period, Amar Avraham. He begins every statement of his with the words Amar Avraham, said Avraham. But he's telling you that he's now speaking.
Okay.
And what he says is that Rava in Baba Kama, Daf Lametet, Meferesh Listam Matnitin, explains the simple Mishnah, De Ein Mamidin Apetropos Letam Ligbot Migufo. That Rava, as we remember, he's just quoting what we know, that Rava had said that the
doesn't
have to pay. That's all.
So in other words,
the Ravid decides like Rava, whereas the Rambam decides like the Hachamim. That's all. So it's an open question, but the Halacha certainly goes like the Rambam. Does the ox have to pay for damage it does as a tam when it's under the guardianship of a apitropos? Rambam says yes, has to pay. The Ravad says no, and they both have a leg to stand on. That's that question. Okay?
Okay.
Now, I'm looking at the clock. I've decided in the past 5 seconds we're going to skip another question we were asking, which was how many times
must he gore?
Does he have to gore? So I'll just tell you the answer. The answer seems to be that the minute it gores once, we appoint the apotropos.
Mm-hmm.
And then under the apotropos, it has to gore 3 times.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then the 4th time, which is really the 5th time, it's what? Why the 5th time, not the 4th time? Because the 1st time it gored, there was no one responsible, so we can't forewarn it. There's no one to forewarn. But once it does it once, we appoint the apotropos, and then if it gets forewarned 3 times, the next time, it's a more. That seems to be the simple understanding of the sources. So I'm not going to read all the sources with you about that. I'll just tell you, because I want to spend the last 10 minutes on a really interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is one we've already hinted at. And it's the following question. The ox is under the ownership, I'm sorry, the guardianship now of a apitropos, and becomes a muad. Okay. And now the minor becomes an adult, the imbecile gets his understanding back, the cheresh gets his hearing back, and the guy comes back from his vacation in the islands of the sea, and he gets his ox back. And then it gores again. It's become a muad under the apitropos. What's the deen? What's the law? Do we say a muad is a muad is a muad? Or do we say, wait a second?
But didn't we say that when the owner now was back and they had responsibility, that it went back to being tam?
Being a tam. Mm-hmm. Yes, we did see that. Mm-hmm. Except for the fact... Well, you know what? Okay, we saw that. Let's see, where did we see that? We saw that in this braita, in the middle of the page...
Chazar l'tamuto.
Right. We read there that chazar l'tamuto, that it returns back to being a tam. But remember that we couldn't take that literally. We turned it into chazar l'tmimuto.
So now we're going to go back to being chatzinezik until sometime?
Let's see what the Gemara says. So we're going to read now the last line of the Gemara we didn't read yet.
Okay.
It's you, my finger is the last line of the Gemara.
Oh, yeah, back up here, okay.
And this is the line that begins, V'seifa b'mai kimi pligi. Do you see that? The seifa means the end, right, the end of the braita. In what is it arguing, livriyut? What is the argument there? What's the argument there?
Kami pligi is argument?
Yes. In modern Hebrew, a miflaga is a... is an arguing party. It means argument. So the Gemara says the question is Reshut Mishane Ika Beinayu. Reshut means let's call it ownership. Mishana, changing ownership. Ika, there is Beinayu among them. Changing ownership there is among them. In other words, the argument among them is changing ownership. What happens when ownership changes?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, again, the question of the guy coming back from the sea or the katan becoming an adult, that's changing ownership. Sumchus savar, sumchus holds reshut mishane. Sumchus holds that the reshut changes, which means that that makes a difference. It returns to its being a tam. V'Rabbi Yosi savar, reshut eina mishana. Reshut changing doesn't matter. Which means it remains a muad. Okay? So it's as if we have in the Braita that argument. When the apotropos bows out of the picture and the original owner comes back into the picture, is it still a muad? Does it go back to be a tam? Sumchus says it becomes a tam, and Rabbi Yossi says that it remains a muad. So now let's see what the Rambam says about that. How does the Rambam decide? So we're right here in the Rambam, near the end, and you're going to hear something now fascinating. Just fascinating. Says the Rambam as follows. Shur shuhu ad v'nimkar. A shur that became a mu'ad, or that was sold, onitan b'matana, or was given as a present. In other words, the Rambam is extrapolating. If we learned about a machloket, an argument, in a case of a cheresh shoteve katan who got ownership of their ox back from the apotropos, and that was called a change of reshut, well, whatever laws apply there, shouldn't they also apply in a normal case of a normal human being selling his ox? That's certainly a change of ownership. So the Rambam's extrapolating. And what does the Rambam say in the next two words? Chazar letamuto. If I sell you my axis muad, it becomes a tam.
May behave differently under the new owner.
Not that it'll behave differently, but you can't hold the can't new hold owner responsible for the negligence of the previous owner.
Did we cover that earlier?
I think that that's people asked the question in this class. We never covered it. People asked the question.
Okay.
I think we discussed it, but never saw text about
or
it.
Or a sale. Yeah, that's right.
Right.
So is that the final word?
Oh, no. Wait a second. Oh, no. We have a good 5 minutes left.
Okay.
So, says the Rambam, Shaharashut shenishtanet mishana dino. Because the reshut that changes, changes the law. So here we really see that this matter of muad is not really about the status of the ox. It's about the status
of the owner.
Aval im hishilu omasru l'shomer. I should read it differently. Aval im hishilo, but if he loaned it or passed it on to a shomer, a watchman, harehu bechezkato. Behold, it remains in its chazakah, in its situation. In other words, selling it is one thing, but having someone borrow it, then it'd be still the owner's responsibility. So it remains a tam. Or if I give it, if I pay someone to babysit it, it's still my responsibility.
Right.
Selling it is one thing. Babysitting is something else. And now the Rambam says something that will blow your socks away. V'chein shur shuhu'ad bifnei apitropin v'nitpakach ha'cheresh v'nishtaf Hashote Vigdila Katan. Translation. And so an ox that was warned in the presence of Petropus, and the Cherish got his hearing back, and the Shote got his mind back, and the Katan became a Gadol, became an adult. Second word of the last line. Afalpi, that's an abbreviation. Afalpi, even though Shebatel apotropos, even though the apotropos is nullified, it goes back to the owner. Harei hen muadin. Behold, they remain muad, bechezkatan, as they are, sharei birshut balehen hen. For behold, they're in the reshut of the owners.
So the owner, if he recovers his mind, he's still...
in person.
Because the apotropos wasn't an owner. He was only a guardian for the owners. So the Rambam says the owners didn't change.
He was acting on behalf of the trustee. The apotropos is acting on the behalf of the owner because the owner can't act for themselves. Once the owner can act for themselves, it's still the same owner.
Right. Right. So the halakha according to the Rambam is you sold it or gave it as a present, the ox returns to its tamness. But if the ox and apotropos and the apotropos bows out because the original owner now can take responsibility, then it remains a muat. Now, that's logical, that makes sense, except it's completely bizarre based on the Rambam source. Because the Rambam source was an argument we just saw in the Braita, in an ox that now went back from the apotropos to the original owner. Mm-hmm. And the argument there was, does this change of reshut make it back into a tam? And there was a machloket there. And it was called a change of reshut. Mm-hmm. The Rambam decides that change of reshut does make a difference, but going back to the original owner is not called a change of reshut. So the Rambam really takes the Gemara in principle, but applies it with a different understanding of what a change of reshut is. The Rambam agrees in the Brit with he who says that a change of reshut changes the law, but the Rambam says the specific type of change of reshut that the Brit was discussing is not really a change of reshut. Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have time to see other sources. There's other sources that say exactly the opposite.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
Which means that if the apotropos gives it up to the owner, then of course it goes back to its original status because the owner can say, I didn't appoint the apotropos. I'm not responsible. The Beit Din appointed him. It's not my problem. I want my tam back. Whereas if someone sold it, you can say the guy who buys it, he has to accept.
Has to expect
as
whatever.
What he got. He knows what he got. Yeah. He got a muad. So there are some who say the opposite. If you bought it, the status stays muad. But if you got it back from your apotropos, the status goes back to being a tam. The opposite of the Rambam. And everything has some sense to it.
If it's muad, you'd have a reduced price probably because you're giving them a damaged good.
Right. If the halakha is that the muad retains its status when you sell it, then you just pay what you buy, what you get.
Right.
Yeah. So anyway, we got a taste of a very interesting discussion. And next week we'll go on to the killing ox. Until now, we weren't talking about killing human beings. We were talking just about damages. Next week we'll go on to the killing ox.
The rabbit
ox. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.